Well, one day, I use those expressions all the time. Subject, object, consciousness. It's basic to psychology and philosophy. One day I was at home and I was getting really irritated with my wife at the time. And I realized that that level of reactivity almost never happened when I was actually sitting in a circle with a group. And I was in that deeper mode of consciousness that had awakened, and it was the vehicle, the agency for the work I had been doing. And I sat down with myself and I said, "What am I doing differently?" And I began to realize I have judgments about my wife, and I have judgments about our life, and I have judgments about my life and what I'm doing here. And I'm remembering the past, and I'm comparing the past to where we are now, and I'm anticipating the future and projecting hope or fearful, apprehensions into the future. And I walked into the room the next day with a group that was retreating with me, and I had a carpet with a beautiful big mandala in the center of it. And I said to people, "Watch. When I'm at the center of this, or as close to my ground of self, that's the me you hear as I'm teaching. That's the me that transmits this energy. That's the me that's there when I'm dancing and forget myself in dance, or when words come in poetry spontaneously. Or, but here, look over here." And I walked in one position and I said, "Over here, I have all these stories about myself, all these judgments about myself. And over on the other side, so think of the mandala as a clock. And the center of the clock is the present moment. This, what is now." There's no thought there because words are representations. A tree is called a tree, which is a representation. It's not, but a tree is not a tree. It's an ineffable mystery. And we too are ineffable mysteries, but we have all these stories about ourselves that either make us grandiose or depressed. So I put the me stories over at the 9 o'clock position, right? And then I walked over to the 3 o'clock position directly opposite the me stories. And I said, "And here are all the stories I have about my wife and about our life and how we're living and how we shouldn't be living." And then I said, "And that, I look to the past, to memories, to justify my reactivity, and so here's the past, and I have all these stories about my past, which are just ways of re-remembering. Each time you have a memory, it's you're re-remembering it in that moment."
And where on the clock is that, the
And that's at
past?
6 o'clock. So, thank you. So that's at 6 o'clock, and the future's at 12 o'clock. Okay. And I walked around and I said, "When you're in the future, the nature of the future is infinite possibility, but it's also absolute uncertainty. And human beings are terribly adapted to uncertainty. So that's where we have all the fear and all the unsafety and all the anxiety. And all the hope and expectation is over, with the positive expectancy. And so the past has positive nostalgia, negative nostalgia. But we grab the past. We grab the memory that justifies why we're angry today, and we grab the story of the other person that creates our anger, or we grab the story about ourselves and identify with it, which creates our sadness, or maybe the opposite direction makes us feel big and important. So that's how the mandala came into life. Then I started figuring out how to teach people that there's only four places your mind can take you when you're not in the present. And you said that in the introduction. It will take you into the past, the future, stories about yourself, judgments about yourself that make you grandiose or depressive, and stories about everyone and anything else you can name. So, there was a time when lithium wasn't important. There weren't many stories about lithium. Now, lithium and batteries. So sort of lithium is gold. It's important. God is a story. Unless you have direct experience of God, God's something you think about, your mind has created, and other people have created that you've read and you choose to believe or not believe. And if you're an atheist, then you just created an anti-God story. But anything you can think about, you judge with a story. And so you never actually know who another is because of the stories you tell about them. So the coming back to that focused awareness, the coming back to the present, the coming down like you did, dropping into your body to find out what you actually felt, That's the movement that brings us to the center of the mandala. That's where the stories fall away. That's where, in the now, in the very depth of presence, there is only sensation, only perception.
So that center in the mandala, are you saying that is a truly trustworthy guide for our inner being?
Absolutely. We all hear about The Power of Now, a wonderful book by Eckhart Tolle. And how do I live in the now? You know, what do I do? Well, just understand there's only four places you can go. If you're angry, you're in stories about yourself or stories about someone else. If you're sad, you're in stories about yourself. If, you know, if you're in regret, you're in stories about the past. If you're in anxious expectancy, you're in the future. I mean, if you come back to the present moment, here am I. If you come back to the present moment, here am I. I'm right here. Here am I. I'm here. And that's the only answer there ever is. Where are you? I'm here, right? Who are you? Just as I am. Just as I am. At the center of the mandala, you are always just as you are. Not what your mind tells you through the me stories. Not what the past tells you. Not what you're afraid you will or won't be in the future. Always you come back to the truth, the deepest truth in the ground of your being, at the center of the mandala, is I'm always exactly just as I am. That's not resignation, it's liberation. That's the truth. You know? And the heart is open. And there's a sense of oneness, there's a sense of sweetness, there's a sense of simple joy. And we get deeper or further away from, closer, further away from that center point. It represents the ground of being, the fundamental ground of who we are. And it's only now.
Richard, you have written, and you just mentioned earlier the word uncertainty, and we are living in a field of uncertainty these days. And now the 21st century has been like that. And you have written about this, and I just loved it. Like, An example that I just have a big judgment about people who embrace conspiracy theories. You know, I might say, oh boy, are they stupid or uninformed. And when in your writing, it made me just laugh out loud, because let's say those people who believe in conspiracy, they're part of the conspiracy club. And you point out, we are all part of some club. And this light leads us to realize what? Where does it take us?
Oh, if you can visualize this mandala, it's always now. It's always now. If you get far enough away into stories about, you know, sacrificing children, eating them in the basement of a pizza store, you're over in that position. You're just believing those stories. If you're believing those stories and their exciting indignation and anger, so you're over in the me position, the 9 o'clock position, and you're an angry, self-righteous person. It's the distance from the center, right? It's in the center, you're a body that's an endpoint of evolution, a form of intelligence 15 billion years old. In the center, you're an earthling. You know, you're not an American or a French person or a Chinese person. In the center, you're not Jewish. You're not Christian, Buddhist, Taoist. In the center, you are awareness and being, and your heart intelligence is there. So everything you're describing is the distance from the ground of yourself. And so having a practice, however you find your way to your practice, that brings you to the ground of yourself will stop your judgments of people who are simply identified with something. So conspiracy theory, people are just identified with what you call, and I do too, nonsense beliefs, okay? But that's what they're doing.
Are they doing it for a feeling
feel
of
safe.
Certainty? Like, and now I don't have to be uncertain.
Exactly, Justine. Uncertainty is a word. The sensation is unsafe. The sensation is fear. In extreme cases, it's terror, right? Uncertainty is the nature of reality. Evolution is this effulgent emergence of generativity and creativity, one new life form after another. It's that, and every life form is uncertain whether it'll have enough food that day. It's the nature of reality. But if you get to the center of the mandala, you have a fundamental trust. You have a sense of belonging, of ground. And all that means is if that something happens, I recently, a year and a half ago, learned I had prostate cancer, and I'm coming up on a year since the treatment. And, you know, when it first happened, when I first saw the information, that test, I knew I had prostate cancer. So immediately all I did was find out, how am I going to go about getting this treated locally? Or am I going someplace else? I decided to go to Mayo Clinic. I had some help from friends, so I actually got seen quickly. And I just went through that process, and it was effortless and beautiful, right? Because I've been practicing living my life closer to the ground. But before I got to that treatment, before, I had a typical workup where you have this radioactive test called a PET scan, positive emission. And I had it the day before, and I saw that there was results in my my health portal, and I hadn't heard from my doctor or anything. So I opened it up and looked, and there it is. There's something in his liver, three large, and the pathology report said it's either metastatic prostate cancer or it's primary liver cancer, right? And in the instant I read that, I was plunged into fear. Now, in a millisecond, I already knew that if that were true, that meant a much more severe form of chemotherapy, a much, much lower life expectancy. Only that, in a flash. But I said to my wife, I've just seen this news, sit with me. And I just leaned up against her, closed my eyes, and I dove into the most remarkable and intense sensation I've ever visited. Just that form of fear. And I just went into it and breathed some more and felt it and relaxed. Is it, how much sensation can you bear, right? I don't know how long that was going on. That she was just sitting quietly. I was just breathing and in it. And then my phone rings and it's the oncologist. And he says, this is crazy. I can't possibly believe this is right. Given all the other clinical presentations, I want you to have an MRI of your liver, and I'm getting it as fast as I can. So within 4 or 5, and the instant that happened, of course, the fear stopped, right? And it's never come back in that way. But I always tip my hat to fear. I'm never gonna say I've beaten fear because I'm awakened, because I've touched enlightenment, because I've reached the peace that passeth understanding several times. No, suddenly, uncertainty, right? Suddenly, uncertainty is simply a word we use for a sensation we don't know how to hold, which is fear or anxiety, whatever you want to call it. And we can hold it. I'm just describing exactly what it's like for me to hold it. There's nowhere, where else do you want to go? You can't go anywhere else. What are you going to do, go out for a run? What are you going to do, go get a drink? What are you going to do, get stoned? What are you going to do, take an anti-anxiety pill? Then you remain illiterate. You remain the victim of fear. Love doesn't want us to turn away from any sensation. Love wants us to make a home for every sensation. That's intelligence. And then we don't need weapons.
Richard, I want to ask you, when you talk about living in that center of that clock or that mandala, the mm-hmm. now, being in the now, that does not negate action, though. Being in the now and yet still acting from that place.
Well, you know, the monks that just went walking from Texas to Washington, D.C., they're in the now. I went to watch them go past an hour and a half or so from here with some friends, and, you know, some of them were barefoot. You know, there's no contradiction between action. It's how are you in your ground, right? You know, I was just talking to a man a couple hours ago who tends to defer to the new woman in his life. Because why? Because he doesn't want to feel unsafe. He wants to make sure love will continue. So the ground of his behavior when he defers gets his intelligent lover, companion, you know, angry. I said, well, when you're coming from the ground of a little boy, she knows that without thinking. She feels that in your energy. Come from the ground of the man that's the lover, and then maybe you do or don't defer. So your action depends on the depth you are of in your ground, and the ground is serene, you know, focused, spacious, ready, relaxed, as I put it, or serene, whatever.
Serene readiness, yes.
Serene readiness, and you don't just get there accidentally. That's a practice. And if people hear anything here at this stage of my life, I'm 79. I know. It's not telling people about anything. The most important thing, there's two things I love the most, my wife and the venture we live and my practice. There are many other things I enjoy, many, 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 many things I enjoy. But the things I love the most, and maybe the greatest grace, is when you just realize, I want to know myself. I want to know a relationship to myself at ever deeper levels for no other reason. That's the Bible that I want to study. That's the Holy Scripture, the holiest of all scriptures. You know, reading scriptures is just reading someone else's inner journey as they recorded it. It's, you know, we're not here to read the Bible except to give us an idea maybe of how other people thought about things. We're here to read our story, to know us in ourselves, to know ourselves in the depths of our being. But whether humanity can do that, love one another, whether we can all find a deeper ground, you know, back to my rant about, you know, data centers, progress as ever applied technologies always tied to some form of gaining wealth is not progress. Real progress is your ability to go deep into yourself and presence with everything and anything. And then you know that no matter what uncertainty brings, what will it bring? It'll bring a sensation like fear, and you'll meet it, right? It'll bring an opportunity to love more deeply, and you'll step into it. You know, there's nothing that's going to come that isn't going to be a sensation and an opportunity to be in relationship. You have a body. As long as you have a body, the now is sensation. The now is feeling. It's not thinking. You know, your thinking just makes you nuts. But it does good things too. It put me inside of an incredibly complex machine that treated me with radiation. I mean, it's done wonderful, wonderful things.
What do you mean when you say we are healing from the ground of love? So what does that mean for you? What is an example of that? What does that mean for you?
Okay. Love is a word we've all heard that we all have a profound intuition of. We know tastes of love in the love of our children or when we fall in love. But we know that love can be written with a capital L, or we could capitalize every one of those letters. We know that Jesus said, God is love, right? In that case, suppose you took the word God out of every conversation and say, what is God's will? What is love's will? Right? You see? But you can't have Richard Moss tell you what love is. You were born, you have consciousness. You decide that love is not an accidental idea. Love is I experienced that. When that black butterfly landed, I knew that the very fiber and fabric of existence is love. And it is beginningless and endless. And to find yourself on a path of evolving through a relationship to love, but you have to decide what love means for you. And then you have to decide how it obligates you. So I don't say, I love my wife. When my wife told me a dream, my now wife, we had been seeing each other very infrequently over a year and a half. Then she had a dream about me, and she said it had been 6 months since I had seen her. And I called her up a couple of days after the dream, and she says, and I said, let's have dinner. Come over for a drink at my, something like that. And she'd had this dream 4 days before, and she gets off the phone and goes, whoa, this could be really interesting really quickly. The dream was, we're sitting side by side, and suddenly energy starts to move between our hearts. And it gets so strong, and then suddenly explodes out into the universe and wakes her up. Whomp! And she goes, oh my God, but why him, right? I mean, she knew something about my life. She was never one of my students, kind of neat, finally. So when she came over and told me that dream, suddenly that energy started moving between us, but not until I'd ask her question. Inside myself, I said, is this someone I can love with? And immediately my being just went, yes. And the second that happened, we both felt that energy move, and it's never stopped. We can find that energy 10 years later. We can find that energy just by looking into each other's eyes, getting quiet. We have a practice of doing that. And so what does love mean? What is the ground of love? That is what we're here, not only to decide with our minds, but to obligate our behavior to. When I said earlier on, if you have a thought about another person that closes your heart, the thought's not true, because it's killing love. If you have a belief that makes you hate another person, that it is not true. It can't be true, because it's stopping love. It's basically stopping God, but God is love. If we play with the words as the great souls have expressed that. So it's essential for every human being on planet Earth to find their way to a relationship with love, and then to be obliged by it. And Jesus was so clear. Loving your own children is no big deal. God, meaning love with a capital L, isn't going to reward you for that. It's when you love everyone's children the same way. It's when you can pray for the people that are carrying you away, the enemy, when you can turn the other cheek, abandon one form of self-identity, let them see, knock down any image you have of yourself, and just keep your heart open. That's turning the other cheek, It's just here. You assault anything you think that I am. I'm none of those things. I'm more than that. So that's it. For me, Justine, that's been my path.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Richard, I just want to thank you so much for all of your contributions, and especially your contributions to that ground of love, or that ground of being in the now, and how that really serves us and will serve all humanity in some way. I've been speaking with Dr. Richard Moss, and he is a teacher, and you can go to his website at Richard Moss, M-O-S-S, richardmoss.com, and you can find all sorts of things that he offers, including a community of other people who are traveling this path with us all. You know, it's so great to do it in the company of others. So thank you so much for that. So that's richardmoss.com. And he is the author of The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. And if you want to know more about his work, you go to that website, or you can go to the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org, where you'll find over 2,000 programs in our program archive, and also all the different people that we've interviewed. So go to newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3,858.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. The audiobook you've just heard was produced by New Dimensions Radio. Since 1973, we've been producing weekly conversations with those at the leading edge of personal and social transformation. To access our archive of thousands of programs and much more, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
This is Bird Note. Does staying cooped up inside with your kids drive you up the wall? Take comfort in the bird that does it year after year, the hornbill. Each breeding season, a female hornbill imprisons herself in a tree cavity and takes on the task of raising her young. In the days leading up to her nest arrest, the female starts blocking the entrance to her nest with a plaster of mud, bark, and poop. Once the entrance becomes so small that she can barely squeeze through it, the female slips inside and fills the gap, except for a thin slot for ventilation and food. She stays in there for months, incubating her eggs and raising the chicks. While she's busy at that, the male brings fresh fruits and a variety of animal protein. At last, when the nest becomes just too cramped, the female escapes the nest and frees herself. The young either follow her out or reseal the entrance and remain in the nest until they're ready to fledge. Most of the 61 hornbill species in the world exhibit these strange behaviors. Locking down provides nesting hornbills some protection from predators and wards off other hornbill pairs looking for a place to nest. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Music. You have tuned in to Open Mic on CJSF Radio, broadcasting on 90.1 FM from Burnaby Mountain, BC.